Hello, cyclocross friends, and thanks for tuning in to episode 171 of Cyclocross Radio. On today's show, another media pit with Michael and Zach. We had a great conversation, talked about the curse period, talked about Wout coming back, a lot about Vanderpool, about the changes in the women's side of racing. I think you're really going to dig it, and we're going to get to it really quickly. A quick note, I've been thinking about this a lot. Instead of you having to fast forward 4 minutes or 5 minutes to get to the actual episode and not listen to my heartfelt pleas for you to go visit our favorite sponsor, Works, I'm just going to say, hey, go get 15% off of what Works has on offer, including the HydroShot and all of their other cool battery-powered stuff by going to yourcleanbike.com. Enter the promo code GEARUP, G-E-A-R-U-P, and then you're done. And go do that now. Post-holiday shopping. Get on with it. Also, go to wideanglepodium.com. Check out all of the other shows that we have for you to listen to there. Become a member. Become part of the family. Follow along. And that's it. Let's get into the episode. Look at that. 1 minute, 15 seconds. We're doing the media pit. It's Cyclocross Radio episode 171, and we're doing it right now. All right, here we are back in the media pit, and we're with Zach and Michael. Zach, I think it's kind of standard operating procedure now that I have to ask Michael. Michael, how's it going?
Wait, this intro has a prop. Hang on.
I hope he knows this is an audio podcast.
I don't know. Should we describe? Okay, so do we need to describe what you're wearing? Or are you going to explain?
Yeah. Go ahead, describe it.
All right. So Michael just put on a POC helmet, and we'll see what happens from here.
Oh, he's got Christmas lights on it.
Oh, nice.
I've got the CX Fever. There's no pun with that one. I just wanted to wear the helmet. Sorry, I saw Magalie Rochette with the lights at Degum, and Bill, I'm doing great. No more puns for me.
Got it.
Nice. Just pure and simple. Pure and simple.
Pure,
I like it.
And simple.
I actually didn't intend that, but anyway, it works. It was just nice. It was good. That was good.
All right, so we're talking about the Christmas period of racing cyclocross in Belgium, and does it flow over into the Netherlands?
I don't think it does. I think it's all just in Belgium. Yeah.
So the races in like Luxembourg are not considered part of this block.
Well, that's
I don't think. Well, so we want to define what cursed period is, and we were having some discussion about that. How would you define it, Michael?
I come to you guys, and I think we sort of, I don't know, I think it's, do you go from the St. Nicholas race, which sounds very Christmas to me, and then do you go all the way to the Brussels race, or do you just end it at Ball, which is New Year's Day, or do you actually end it like earlier than that? I've seen various definitions through riders and, you know, websites and Googling cursed period and getting sort of 12 days, 14 days, 15 days. So I want to come to you guys. So I feel like I'm more the experts. What would you guys say?
Well, we got the weekend, right? So St. Nicholas would be Saturday the 21st, Waslen Cross, right? And then you have that Sunday, which was Namur. Is that part of it? Would that World Cup be part of this period?
I kind of defer to the official European correspondent of the CX Hares Media Empire, Ethan Gladding, and we had this discussion, and I think he said that curse period is Zolder to Bale. How do we say it? Ball. So I think it covers the period between Christmas and then the New Year's race. Okay. So I think we settled on Namur being curse period adjacent. And, you know, with Brussels, that's a new race. Like, that didn't exist before last year. So I don't know. It seems like there's a lot of history behind Curse Period in terms of, you know, the races and the party-like atmosphere. But anyway, that's what our official European correspondent said.
All right.
Okay.
So
yeah, I like that.
Zolder is December 26th. And then you go straight into Lonehout, which is the 27th.
And then we're going to ignore the French race. And then we got Degum, which is the 29th. And then Berdine, which is the 30th. And then what do we got coming up? Ball, 31st.
Ball is on the 1st.
Oh, ball is on the 1st.
Yeah, okay. New Year's Day. Yeah, that's the big one because we're going to see the new kits for Quinten Hermans and Corny Van Kessel. Usually that's like where we have to get acquainted with new kits when everyone changes everything in the middle of the season, which is just so weird to me.
Yeah, and so also Tom Ewson, huh? No longer with Corendon?
Right, yep.
That's right, yeah, yep.
Some changes there. But Lucinda Brand's already changed into her Telnet kit, so we're good there.
I mean, I think what's really interesting is like when they switch bikes, and then you talk to them, and they'll be like, yeah, we got the bikes like 3 days before the new year or whatever. You know, it seems like it's such a big change to be riding a bike at that level and then all of a sudden have to go race on a brand new bike, you know, without much experience. Just seems kind of wild to me.
I feel like some disciplines, I don't know, it seems like there's some black magic in some of this, because like some disciplines are able to just like hop on a new bike and go. It seems like cyclocross racers are kind of adaptable to that. I mean, obviously some don't like their bikes and they want to change. We saw that with Wout obviously a couple of years ago. But for the most part, it seems like they're just like, okay, new bike, we go race our bike, whatever. And then like mountain bike and road, it seems like it's just a huge change and something that may even affect which team you're going to go to and all this other kind of stuff. But I don't know. I feel like cross racers are able to change from bike to bike. Maybe that's because they're all just made in the same factory and pretty much the same mold at this point.
That is so weird. I would be more picky about my road bike personally, but or less picky. Sorry, less
picky. Yeah, picky, really.
Bike. Like it's a road bike. Yeah, whatever. Like,
but don't you feel but you're on more. You're on it for a longer period of time. Fair. So you're
but you
got to like,
do more crazier things on your cross bike, right? You got to like ride your little 32 tires up the cobbles of Namur. I don't know. Yeah, that is interesting. Being able to immediately get on a new bike and race a cross course.
Yeah.
So I think we agreed, though. We're gonna start with curse period adjacent races. I think we decided that does Namur not feel like it was like 7 years ago to you guys?
God. It's amazing. I look at like U.S. Cyclocross Nationals, and I'm working on like this heat check now, and I'm going back to all my footage from Nationals. And I'm like, so how many months ago was this?
I'm with you, man. It was like two weekends ago or whatever. It's crazy.
Well, I want to just to wrap up the general topic of the curse period. I think one of the fun things about this, and we'll sort of maybe talk about this, is that you get these bigger riders who kind of come in for this like block of racing. So you get Stibar. We saw PFP at Degum. And what it does is you get the, you know, quote unquote Sven cam, where the camera actually goes back into the field and we get like the glimpse to see a bunch of other riders. And oftentimes like this, during this past week, we've seen American riders riding with Stibar or near PFP. I think Claire Hansinger got pipped to the line by PFP. But I think that's kind of one of the fun aspects of this time period.
Well, yeah, and come next year, we might have wild cards where, like, the Bahrain Merida guy
About Henrik Klaus-Hausler, who had, like,
yeah,
he was, like,
so there
in
might
50th
be actually
place.
The whole field might be roadies who are like, hey, give me my second row call up because I'm a wild card. Who knows what's going to happen? That's what they want. Like, who knows if that's what's going to happen? It might be more of a thing. So, Michael, curse period might be like Christmas for you next year.
Yeah. You know, also, like, it should just be, you know, they say the classics are kind of a stage race. They spring classics and road. Like, let's just make the curse period an omnium, a cyclocross omnium. Like, I'm trying to, like, I like this idea of, like, creating, like, little series throughout the seasons. And I did that at the stateside World Cup races, and I tried to make an omnium of all the series, but I didn't tell anybody about it because I didn't do a good job of my spreadsheet. But I like this idea of like creating an omnium like over the Christmas break. And so quick math, Matthew Vanderpoel won the cursed period inaugural omnium for the men. there's a little bit of debate between the women. Brand won 2 World Cups, but I think that Alvarado was so consistent that maybe you could, you know, the points can make a case for her winning. But anyway, that's, I'd like to see that. Maybe Flanders will want to pick up on that idea.
I mean, are you saying that this is more of an objective thing, and there's not, like, say, a power rankings with some standings and math behind it?
I like to mix objective and subjective.
Oh, okay. All right. Fair. I actually like the idea of a committee naming, like, the podium for a curse period. Like, making it, that would be, like, super...
Well,
like,
that'd totally
be super, like, controversial. Like, there'd be lots to talk about. Who was the rider of curse period?
So this is pretty much like the Houston Rockets versus college football playoffs. One, you're just straight up analytics. And then the other, you have this secret committee who get to watch games and decide who's better.
Exactly. And I mean, look at how much controversy there is. Look at how much ink gets spilled, virtual ink now, over like the 65th team in the NCAA tournament's going to be. I think it adds some new interest to it. You know, where does Wout stand? You know, I mean, what he did was pretty, does he get like a pity third? You know, does he get a pity wide angle podium spot? Who knows? Who knows?
I feel like analytics are so far away from cyclocross, and it's such a feel. It's like, oh, he looks like he'll be fast. Let's put him in there type thing. You know, sort of old school. I think we're still in that old school mentality for cyclocross. Seems to be working.
Yeah, I think you're onto something, Michael. I don't know. I think, maybe we could propose this for next year for, like, you know, take the heat check, you know, to the next level next year and have the heat check just be decide who wins national, you know, her call-ups for nationals or something.
Are you saying that the heat check has to add some sort of subjectivity to it? I don't know if I could handle that. This is both math and science.
Okay.
Purely an algorithm.
You're right. Never mind. All right. Okay. Well.
All right. Well, let's move on to Nomura. We put this on the agenda because it's not, as you said, it's adjacent, curse period adjacent. But you know, it's when I think of like Belgian or Eurocross, I think of like a venue like Nomura, or I think of something like Azencross that's out in a field, like literally field riding. And this is, I mean, the Citadel Nomura, like. Kind of maybe the most, I hate to use this word, epic conditions we've seen, like wet and cold, and they, you know, changed the course, and it was kind of like, you know, some of those course changes maybe affected the race, especially in the men's field. I don't know. Let's go there, guys. What did you think about the additions? I think one of the big additions to the course was the kind of controversial downhill, like snake serpentine stairs. Bill's shaking his head.
Well, I what were they going for there? I don't understand, because that's never been a part of the course.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Nomura has been around for like a decade now or so, and it's already like a really, really hard course without the stairs that have sand on them.
Yeah, that was pretty much at the end of the men's race was... all the sand had washed away and deposited itself at the bottom and became a hub deep quicksand pile for riders to endo in.
Like Tonerts.
Yeah. And like pretty much everybody. Like, yeah. And,
but then isn't that where he injured himself?
No, but okay. He had a gap over Vanderpool, endoed in that section. Vanderpool caught up. So that was one of the points where the course really affected the outcome of the race.
Can I tell you my most disappointing part of Nomura this year? And I'm not sure how it happens or if you can even affect it. The off camber, like the most famous grassy off camber in cyclocross, the thing that like every American course wants to copy because it's, oh, we're just going to draw a straight line across this this hill and just go off it straight off camber. That's it's a very American thing. Yet here it is usually the most just epic section, and the one that if you like watching strategic cyclocross, it's really, you know, pick door one, pick door two, or curtain C. of which line you're going to be. And every year it's like, oh, it's the high line. Oh, it's the high line. And you go halfway and then you sort of slide down to the middle line. And, oh, are those people who think that the low line's the best, and they go by the low line and then up to the middle line, and they always get screwed by doing that. And then this year it's just like middle line, one line, straight down the middle.
Do we know what happened?
Like, I don't know. I mean, my theory was that they didn't let enough cows out on this, or the cows like all picked the same line and they didn't create these different lines in this pasture.
I think it
affected the race, because that is a place where moves have been made. I have to find the race, because I always reference it and I forget what it is, but it was. And I want to talk about this with Vanderpool later, but it's the one where Vanderpool like just slid all the way down early on. It was like 4 or 5 years ago into one of the posts and just got so frustrated. Basically, they like picked up his bike and threw it down, and like Wout's just like riding away from him, and he finally got back on. And it was in the old days when that was it. Like Vanderpool was done, but it was like it's so affected these races, and it was such a non-factor this year. And I think that really changed Namur, because that was a thing where you actually needed skill, as opposed to this downhill sandy step thing where you never knew when you were going to go down. You never knew which landmines you were going to go over and it was going to bring you down.
So I'd heard that, I guess, the entrance to that section changed, but I always just assumed that like the ruts were just kind of there. Cause I watched, there was Galazzo actually put out a pre-ride video. And it's just like, it's just a hill.
Do you think because of the different, yeah, it used to be like a U-turn into it, and then you came out of it and you turned left, and this year you turned right. Do you think like those different entrances and exits affected where they put it on the hill? It seemed like it was narrower. Like it used to be a lot wider. And I wonder if it was like higher up or lower down on the hill, so you didn't actually have those classic lines within.
So like
that
maybe we were only seeing a rut of the three or whatever. Yeah I wonder. Something had to go. But you know, you look at it, and I was watching the preview video, and they go through it, and I'm like, oh shoot, that's the off camber. So it's interesting to see these Euro courses without all the fans and the spectators and everything we've come to see. And I was like, whoa. Wait a second, that was the off-camber?
I did that. We did that when I went to Belgium for Paris-Roubaix and for Flanders. And I was like, oh, there's, I don't forget which field it was. I was like, because you're just riding by and you see like the cities like on the side, like Hama or whatever it is. I was like, oh, let's go. And we're looking, and it's like, that's just a field. Yeah, that's just a field.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always wonder about some of those Euro courses, if they just like are just, they just are in rest, you know, they just rest. And then, you know, the week before they build them up and they're a course, or do people like train on them or practice on them? Obviously Namur is a different situation, but yeah, once you kind of take all the fanfare away, it's just a feature, just a hill.
Yeah. My favorite is, and I forget which race it is, where it's basically just in everyone's backyard. Like you make it's a suburban street, and then you take a right turn between two houses, and then you're back in the farmer's field behind the houses, and that's the track, which I love, because there's basically these people have these front row seats because it's their driveway, and then they're just racing through the hedgerow next to it, which is
isn't part of Azincross kind of like that.
The one I'm thinking of, I think, is the one that has all of the sort of the drainage ditch type things, but the big one, so you're always like going down and back up through the like three or four times. I don't know. And they build
you're
like
describing eight, like 16 different courses,
yeah, and they build like 18 different flyovers and serve beer, yeah, and call it cyclocross.
All these years I still have a hard time keeping track of all these different courses.
You know Kokseide, you know Zonhoven,
yeah. You know, Namur. So here's a little off track, but what, there's another race course, like a car racing track that has been used
Spa?
As a, what is it?
Spa in France?
Was it
the
huge
hills. Those
run
are the
up?
Huge climbs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the one that they were, I think it was either Wout or Vanderpool when they're like he's basically throwing up on the side and they're trying to interview him after he won, because it's just like this huge uphill sprint to the end.
Yeah, I just remember, yeah, that's it. It must have been Spa. I just remember that climb was like climbing the wall in like Game of Thrones. It was just like so vertical that they're
Spa,
like practicing.
Spa was also the one in which the pits, everybody just basically threw their bike down at the at the front of the pits, and then it was just like this pile of bikes and they're kind of running over them to their, it was just insane.
All right, so I'm going to step in and do my role and get us back on track here. So, Namur, I think Lucinda Brand, you know, I think big story for her winning 2 years in a row. I said last year when she won at Namur, it was a really sloppy day. I think kind of everyone in the women's field was like, oh, crap. Lucinda Brand, you know, arguably the strongest woman in the world in cross, learned how to handle her bike and win on really difficult conditions. And she did again this year. So, I mean, I don't know. If I'm, you know, one of her competitors, I'm getting pretty worried at this point, because she has come so far in her bike handling ability. I'm impressed.
Which race did she get hurt in?
Azencross.
Azencross, yeah. Okay. So I just saw that she has been tested extensively on, today, and got the green light to race at Ball. I think no matter what condition she was in, she was kind of going to be nudged towards racing in Sven's race, since it's a
telemetry. Oh, yeah.
Well, and race. I mean, how cool is it that, like, you know, part of being with that team, like, she got to go pre-ride Namur with Sven.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I don't know. What a cool, you know, like, cool side benefit, learning experience, you know, that she gets being with that team.
Yeah, so, I mean, speaking of the women's race, you know, it wasn't as close in Namur as it was in Zolder, but in thinking towards, you know, world championships, just the rivalry right now, or the back and forth between Lucinda Brand and Alvarado has been pretty great, and I think I've talked about sort of like two different generations of riders, and I just, you know, I love looking at head-to-heads, and they're actually tied 3-for-3 this year, and anytime, it's usually the other person, like, as you know, they're one spot away. So I, you know, thought, you know, do we get into some like really maybe early worlds picks?
Do we even know though? Are they even going to be competing against each other? Do we know?
I don't think so. I think,
right?
I heard on Deegan broadcast, Alvarado's going the U23s.
Sure. Which makes sense.
Yeah.
So maybe we're looking at Brand against Worst. Because that's the other rivalry, which we'll get to, is Worst against Alvarado.
Yeah.
Too. I mean, they've been throwing down as well. So, I don't know. I think those are right. Aren't those the two favorites at this point?
For the
Brand, Worst. I mean, if Voss hasn't, you know, it's hard to count out Voss. I guess we'd get to like, what is the course going to be like? It's flat. It's going to be more power.
I think it's going to be similar to Bowensa, based on the Yolanda Neff, the one photo in like 8 seconds of video. It seems like they're going to try to pack a bunch of technical stuff in on like whatever that embankment is or whatever. But right. Wasn't that like the insult that, or the thing? We think it's going to be pretty flat.
Yeah.
It's an airport. Like airports are flat.
Right. It's the dike cross. So if that's the case, and if we truly are looking ahead, then yeah, I mean, you got to think that, it's going to be a Dutch woman who's going to win. We know that. That's kind of a no-brainer, but I think you're right. I mean, Brand probably goes in there as the big favorite, and Voss is probably right up there with her, because if it's not going to be a technical course, that's something where she can still crush on.
I mean, I think she hasn't had great results lately, but Yara Kostelein, you know, is
power,
like a fire hydrant of watts, you know, literally at Degum, she just would get gapped on all the technical sections and she would just close every gap. And I mean, she's incredibly powerful. So if it's a course that doesn't,
is she, you know, where is she? She's 22. What's her racing age? Is she also going to be a U23?
She's elite.
She's elite.
She graduated.
Because she's the elite Euro champion, too.
Like, Degum was just so... I guess we're just jumping around, but...
I mean...
No, it's fine. Like, Degum, like, she got dropped on that off camber every lap, and, like, every lap, she just came flying back. Like, I've seen something like that before, but, like, it was so predictable. You could set a metronome to what was going to happen at that part of the race. It was incredible. Like, her... You know, I mean, I think that's been a knock against her, right, is her technical skills, and we've seen that in some, like, say, the Nemurs of the world or whatever, but...
But do you think at this point she's just, like, not stressing it? She's like, okay, I'm not going to, like, burn any matches trying to ride this. I'll just get through it knowing that I can, you know, go into this calmly and sort of make my way back?
Well, and that's why I think this course at the course we haven't seen yet at Dubendorf, in theory, if it's, I mean, we saw this at Lakewood, right? If the technical sections are short and, like, all you have to do is get through them and you're only going to lose a second or two, like, you can overcome that and be in the race. Like, it's when the whole course is a technical section, like at Namur, like, then you're in trouble, right? And so I think, like, it just seems like it's likely to be that kind of course without, you know, whatever we saw a map last year. or whatever. You know, I think they could definitely affect the dynamic. And, you know, you saw Degum, not super technical.
Yeah.
Handful of spots, and she was able to recover on the, you know.
Yeah, and I think that you see that. You can really see it. You're going to get the... If you have the... You were talking about Lucinda Brand and her improved technical skills. So if your tool chest is just kind of full with everything and you can do anything, you're going to win the race. That's kind of what we saw from her. Same with Alvarado, same with Wurst. I mean, they're just strong everywhere. But then if you look beyond that for the women at Namur, you can see where that technical capability is a premium. You know, you got Evie Richards in fourth, still coming back, still sort of reaching her old power, just doing it on her technical skills, mountain biking skills. Katarina Nash in fifth, somebody who will tell you, I can't keep up with them anymore, but when it comes to the technical crap, she's going to be better than anybody else because she just, you know, can descend like a demon and doesn't care and has amazing technical skills. You know, Hansinger, Compton. Also, I think that the great ride here that we got to talk about, because somebody who maybe has gotten a knock in the past on her technical skills, and maybe we saw a little bit of that come back today, even though she got second place, is Rebecca Farringer, you know, who put in just, I would argue, one of the best rides of her career at Namur for this World Cup.
I think I called it a career ride.
There you go.
I think I went that far. Like...
Well, that's from you, we know that you're just, like, underestimating her. So it doesn't really count.
I do have a bad history of doing that to the Beck star. It's true. I do. I do underestimate Becky. But as I've told her, like, you know, I mean, I got to know her pretty well at Montana Cross Camp. I'm like, put on your bulletin board. Put up on your bulletin board. Use that as motivation. And to your point, I think she kind of used what our friend Timmy Johnson was saying on the broadcast. You know, she went back and watched the broadcast and they were kind of doubting her technical skills. And I think it's awesome that she rose to the occasion and had that great ride at Namur.
I think it's also, you know, we've seen Rebecca Farringer basically through her entire cyclocross career. And we all know her to a certain extent, know that the type of person as she is, know how analytical she is about these things, and she's going to get better. I mean, that's just who she is. She isn't going to allow a weakness to exist. So I think over the years where, yeah, her technical skills were not where she wants to be, but they're head and shoulders above what they used to be. And I think it's pretty awesome. And I think that this year she also is allowing herself to be confident in the way that she rides, and that is having a huge effect on how she's doing and the results that she's getting. And it's she's the fun one to watch right now, and I look forward to watching her the rest of her European campaign.
You know, if we take Katarina Nash, we've adopted her. She's a North American. You look at Namur, you have 10 North American women at Namur. Just that was really great to see. And it's, you know, that course is so hard and that race is so hard that usually I was actually kind of surprised to see how well they did. And then we go to Zolder and things are completely different. I mean, it's a different track, much faster, but just the ability for these women to ride really strongly on that technical course was a great thing to see. And, you know, it was pretty interesting. And Rebecca noted this as much, that she rode in a good enough position to get out sprinted for that position at the end with Katie Compton taking her in like the second to last turn. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because I think we looked at Namur as potentially a somewhat historic day, right, for U.S. women, with so many women in the top 10. But Valkenburg was also, I think we had three women in the top like eight there, maybe, or top 10. And so it's interesting that it's like that, those kinds of conditions, like, yeah, are women.
Yeah, I was going to say Valkenburg is a course that Americans have always excelled. And I think Compton's won it maybe more than once, and Katie Keough got on the podium at Valkenburg. I mean, yeah, you're right, Zach. It's these are the type of courses that some seem to set up. We always get knocked on having like easy tracks in North America, but it seems like the harder ones are where the Americans are doing better, where maybe it's more sandy ones, or even if we're talking about Zolder, that we kind of struggle at.
Yeah, it's the heavier, thicker, whatever, climbier courses. You know, and I think those are allowed the skill sets. Although Becca kind of explained this in her interview, she was like, look, you know, Namur is the kind of course where you don't need the best start, where everyone's going to make mistakes, that you can kind of grind it out, you know, pick up your spots. But like Zolder was fast. Like, if you weren't up there right away, you weren't making up that gap unless you're, you know, Lucinda Brand and have just overwhelming power. Like, it's different kinds of racing that it seems to suit. You know, we've Compton, Hansinger, Rebecca. I would say they're more grinders than, you know, like speedsters.
Yep.
And that's.
Speaking of the one who makes the least mistakes win, should we talk about the men at Namur?
Yes, we should.
start us off.
Well, I'm gonna go to like the end, and I just want to talk about little Ellie. Little Ellie getting carried off by his helper into the tent. It was like the most brutal sight ever.
Yeah, that's the one thing we really haven't mentioned, just the conditions there, like near freezing temperatures, damp to the core, and I don't know what led to it, but just every rider like on the verge of hypothermia out there, just horrible conditions. Easier be getting carried off was just kind of crazy. And I think that a lot of the other riders also just being affected by those temperatures. Do you think, did it change from the women's to the men's? Do you think the temperature dropped, or were the women having the same issue?
It started raining again.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think was the big thing, because the course just went from like bad to a disaster. Like, yeah, minute it just got worse.
And talking to our aforementioned European correspondent Ethan Glading in there, he credited it as the worst day he's ever worked as a photographer at a race.
Yeah, although he did tell me that his rain jacket failed, and so like he had. You know, he Bill, you would know this. He needed the duct tape. He needed to just duct tape that guy, cover up those holes. And I did get new rain pants for Christmas, by the way.
Good.
It was terrible, and it just got progressively worse. And that affected the men's race, which is really, it was a banger. It's one of the better ones we've seen in a while.
Yeah, it was so good. I think, you know, I actually rewatched that race just now before we got on the show. And it's, you know, one of those races where you know the result, and I kind of forgotten like how many lead changes there were, and multiple times, you know, I think Vanderpool had a few flats, mechanicals, they were crashing, you know, a lot of these lead changes happening because of the course and course design. You know, you had Pidcock who was charging, but then just took an endo, and you know, Koenigsegg Kessel chasing up. But, you know, this was, I guess what was interesting about this race was that we kind of see, I feel like Tone has not been I say he's not been the man that he, the rider that he was last year, although he's had ton of like podiums and great results, but it kind of seemed like he has been rising in his form, maybe, you know, trying to do that world championship peak, and he goes down and fractures, we find out later, fractures 4 ribs, like during this epic battle with, you know, the streakster Vanderpool.
Well, and it happened though, because I mean, so he made that mistake on that left-hand turn. You know, they caught it on the broadcast where he kind of clipped a pedal and like Vanderpool just attacks, like, you know, that's all he needed. And so then he was just riding at his limit. And I think we've seen this. We've seen this a lot. I guess we saw it a lot at Nationals where there was like the second place person, you know, was riding at their limit, would make a mistake because, you know, you're riding at your limit. And I think we saw that where Vanderpool had one, you know, Vanderpoolian effort left in him. But it happens so quick. From my perspective, so I'm not a morning person. So I was just going to watch the replay on NBC Gold, and I saw, like, I turn it on and Matthew Vanderpool is posting up. I'm like, oh, okay. Vanderpool wins. And I'm watching the race and like 8 times, I'm like, how did Matthew Vanderpool win this race? like, was that a replay for some other day? Like, how does he win this race? Like,
yeah,
he was down
great.
By 30 seconds at one point. Like, it was, it was insane.
Can I say that this is the first time in years, and you mentioned it, Michael, that the rewatchable aspect of the men's races. And it used to be, I mean, I know like in Neil Sven days, there were so many rewatchable races where I could go back and watch the same race multiple times. And this season, and I think it's just, you know, it's sort of unfortunate because it's usually like when something goes wrong with Vanderpool and all of a sudden then it becomes this rewatchable, right? Like Azenkross, I just watched again on the trainer yesterday because it was such an amazing and the same thing, Zach. I'm looking at it and like Easerbeat is out and Merlier are out there and I'm like, there's nobody else in the picture. There's nobody else 2 turns away. How the hell does Vanderpool come back and win this thing? It's insane and it's just so much fun to watch. And I know that, you know, it's you're sort of torn there because that's what you want, but at the same time, like as Vanderpool has said before, I get paid to win races, so he's not really concerned about your entertainment value. But thankfully, much to some mishaps there, we've actually gotten these races or flats or whatever, mechanicals or whatever else, or, you know, in this case, endoing on the first flyover, then we get to actually have a fun race.
It reminded me of, I think it was 16 to Mer, when him and Wout went into the last lap, when that was the race that in the first lap, Wout ate it on the rutted off camber and endoed, and then he crashed again and like somehow was still in it in the last lap. Because I actually went back and watched that one after Namur. Yeah. So that's one of the rewatchables that I can remember.
Huh. Okay. I feel like we should compile a list of like really good editions of races, like the rewatchables.
There's The Ringer, like Bill Simmons does a podcast for movies called Rewatchables. We could just have cyclocross rewatchables.
We should develop a list.
Yeah.
We should do that. That would be super fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I would offer, one of the 2017 worlds with Kant and Voss, like that last lap. I think we could do a whole podcast on the last lap of that race. That was pretty amazing.
Well, even the, was it Compton at Milton Keynes? That was an amazing. Yeah, there's so many out there. I mean, we're talking today. We're like, somebody was bringing up brake checking, and everybody just automatically knew like the Hama race between Van Aert and Vanderpool from what, like 3 years ago. You know, and they're just these just classic races that stick out. Of course, you know, Zolder with Sven and Wout is, of course, I would say one of the classic races of all time. So
let's put this down for the off season. I think we're onto something here.
Yeah.
Let's move on to, we got Woutmus. That's a big story. I feel like we can't do a media pit and not talk about Wout Van Aert making his return to cyclocross. Zach, I credit you with Woutmus, so I don't want to like,
well, I was going to share this, like, Bill, like, this is, I don't have nearly as many Twitter followers as you, but random person on Twitter who was just like, responded, dude, that's not cool. I was like, I was like, it's a joke. I'm like, what did I do wrong? Like, am I offending someone? So I don't know. If I don't know if we should call it Weltmas. One random person on Twitter like did not like.
Did they didn't follow up and tell you why?
No, it was just no Weltmas. I don't know.
Was this a Shoestar or a Cyclocross magazine response?
Oh, it was Shoestar. I would never do that from the corporate account.
Interesting.
I don't know. It was weird. I didn't know. I was like,
are you equating him to Jesus? Is this the problem?
No. Is it like making a play on words for Christmas? I mean, it was an exciting thing. People were pretty stoked. Anyway, people were really excited.
He is arisen. He went down for.
I wasn't
three
going
days
for
in
that.
A cave.
I was just really excited that Wout was coming back, and I think like everything about
he
that
returned
day
to played. Cross.
Anyway. Sorry. It looked like a great day. People came out. Like, there were
people
a lot of
came
people
out.
There.
Holy cow, yeah. Did people come out? That place was jam-packed. Was it like six? What did they say? How many people were there?
I think they said 16,000.
Yeah, 16,000. Yeah.
But it was
it was 60,000. That sounds crazy. Okay. Yeah, 16 sounds more.
Well, our European correspondent, man, he's getting a lot of mic time here today. Gladding was there, and he was like, dude, I couldn't move. It was terrible. So it was like his second worst day for a photographer because like people were standing 15 deep. It was incredible.
Yeah, you kind of free. I mean, I guess maybe, you know, being here in the States, you know, yeah, we like Wout, but you know, he's Belgian, you know, that's his country, his home country. Like he's got a lot of fans there. He's a big deal. And you kind of forget about that impact. I also want to say, this is just a side note, is that Wout looked stout. He looked, I'm noticing the arms. I feel like his, like, you know, you got to rebuild, you know, from the ground up. And like, they really kind of like, he was pushing the steel, pushing the weights for his rehab. And I don't know, maybe, I don't know. But I thought, I was like, all right, Wout looks good. Like, he's ready to go. He's also ready to maybe play a little, you know, linebacker, you know.
Well, he did say, I mean, he did say his goal is to win the green jersey. And so I kind of wonder if he's just kind of like revamping to become a sprinter.
Yeah.
That may play part of it. I don't know. But he recently said that like that's his goal is to win.
Yeah.
Got to be able to bump in there. You know, if you're going to be at the front of the peloton, you got to be able to mix it up. So.
So, Ruler Derby had the prop. Would Wout place in top five?
Yeah,
and he got fifth. So, did you guys win any internet points on that one?
Man, I was slow to get my bets in. I'm all in now. I just basically bet on everything I could for the upcoming propositions for Ball, which all of you should do too at Ruler Derby. .com, but no, did you bet on this?
Well, I'll say that I think Tim was it Merlier who jumped in first and was like he wouldn't do this unless he was had potentially top five. So I was like, I'm paying attention. Okay, I'm leaning towards that, you know. And Yes was laying some good odds. I think it was 2-1, and the other one was like 4-5 for No. And then Vanderpool was just like, yeah, he's gonna fish in the top five. I'm like, boom, I'm all in. Vanderpool said it's happening. And I was on pins and needles, man, because like he was in that group, and you're like, oh, like wasn't he in like the 4th through 8th group or 4th through 7th or something? And it was just like, oh man, I'm nervous now. I went with Vanderpool, so
it was interesting too because they let it was like Wout came back and everybody just fell in line. Either that or they were just punking him because they were just letting him pull them around like for about 2/3 of that race. Everybody was just getting on the Wout train. But here's my theory that's not really a theory. So we start this race and they all take off like a shot and they have two turns and then right away they have this big flyover. Vanderpool is over on the right hand side of the flyover. Do you think that he felt the presence of Wout there? That he's like, this is a Wout race. I've been hanging out in these races, letting the race come to me. This one, I got to be out front just to send a little message to Wout to make sure he knows who's still in charge here. And then he hits that thing wrong. I think he came unclipped first. Like he hit the base of the flyover, came unclipped, and then really went over his bars. And then it was just this amazing scene where Matthew Vanderpool is standing on the incline of the flyover while this mass of people, because the race just started, so another 60 people are swarming around him, and he isn't able to get back to his bike, which is like 2 feet away from him. And he just stands there calmly, sort of with his hands crossed, and just kind of waits and waits and waits, and then finally it clears, and he gets his bike and gets back on, and then we have a race.
I do. Wow, I love God. Bill theory. I love Bill theories. You do have great theories. I love it. Let's go with it. I love it.
I think WoW got in his head straight up right away. I think you're right, Bill. He WoW was all up in his business, and he was thrown off his game for a slight second and did that sweet nose wheelie while he was like sitting on his stem. But yeah, as he's shown us before, like he can be in the last row and still come back. So,
and that is also what I put in the show notes that I wanted to talk about a little bit is just this change in Matthew Vanderpool, and it goes back to that race that I talked about earlier at Namur, where he got frustrated, kept sliding down the off camber, and you hate to say that somebody gave up, but he definitely wasn't putting in the same kind of effort for the rest of the race after that happened. He was sort of conceded himself to the position that he was going to finish in. You know, we saw it also at Zolder during the World Championship when his, was it his foot or Wout's foot? Whose foot went through?
He stepped into Wout's
wheel. Yeah, he stepped into Wout's wheel, and they had to sit there and get untangled for a second, and it kind of energized Wout. And he was like, all right, game on. I have to get back into this. And it kind of took the wind out of Vanderpool's sails. And he was never the same after that and just could not get back into the race. And it seems like from that time until now, the maturity of Vanderpool is that he's now able to get over those mistakes, get back into it, race back to the, take his time, race back to the front, and still win. Where I don't know, and maybe it's just he's so damn strong now that it doesn't matter, and that's the difference. But I kind of want to think it's more of just all of this race experience at the biggest races in the world, from road to mountain bike to cyclocross, that he just knows how to deal with that adversity that he didn't know how to deal with before. And it's even scarier now because he can do this after making these huge mistakes.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, that makes sense. I mean, he's still pretty young. I mean, he's still 24 or whatever. Yeah. You know, I think I can imagine being that talented from a young age, you can get frustrated. And we've always said that about him. And he's finished like in the 20s in Copenhagen a couple times where he's just like, I'm out. I'm done. Like, there's no fighting for ninth in Matthew Vanderpool.
Yeah.
Before. Yeah. I mean, now it doesn't even matter. Like, you know, the same thing happened like at Tabor. He started third row and was way back, and he fought his way back, and we saw it at Lohenhout as well. So yeah, I mean, he's maturing as well. He's a young adult now.
my other moment where I just, you like to put yourself in the other people's heads is when he's coming back, and just, when the tables are turned, where we can say that maybe Wout got into Vanderpool's head, where the opposite, where he just felt that presence behind him as Vanderpool was coming back, and he's like, he's right behind us, isn't he? He's coming through.
Well, from a viewing standpoint, though, I mean, I think Tabor created at least an interesting dynamic, not starting him on the front row, and Azenkross was interesting because there was that can he pull it off aspect. I mean, I was like kind of riveted watching is he gonna pull this off? It created interest for better or worse.
And as I said, and who knows if anything will come of this, but what I was telling you guys, I probably shouldn't say this publicly, but I was just kind of like writing this Sven-ness in my head as I was watching this. And one of the big things about that were a couple things. One, his decision to take the road less traveled through the mud on one of those long mud straights. Everybody's hugging the right-hand side. It's obviously a much harder much bigger match to burn to go left. And he's kind of like, screw it, I'm doing it. And he like passes seven guys and then does that move, that thing where, you know, pre-disc brakes you would never be able to do, where he just makes this right turn and just sort of drifts back into the, is able to sort of brake and drift back into the line and picks up seven spots. And then he's coming over the barriers later on, and it's really Tim Merlier that I think wins the race for Vanderpool because he screws up the planks. You know, he has a little misstep on the planks. Vanderpool is able to scoot ahead on that section, and then it's just it's a clean path for him between him and the leaders. And once he got past that traffic, it was just a time trial. He had to pick up 20 seconds. There was nobody that was going to get in his way. So he's able to pick his lines, go wherever he wanted. And then it was, you know, it took him like a lap and he was back on those guys' lines. But yeah, I mean, just, and that was the part, that's what I'm saying. It's like, that's why it was rewatchable for me, because these are the things that when he's out there time trialing ahead by 2 minutes, you don't get to see, you know, having those other pawns out there, having those other obstacles for him to have to overcome. That's the fun of it. And that's why these races have been so exciting to watch. And that one in particular, I love, because you could just see the strategic decisions he was moving and the bento box that he needed on his bike to fit all the matches that he has that nobody else does.
And that's part of the thing. I mean, like, the part that stuck in my mind was when he was with Ellie Iserby in the last lap in that mud pit. Like, he opened up like a 10-second gap on that one stretch of mud, you know, and you could just see as Vanderpool is just plowing through it, and Ellie, you could just see him being broken in that one mud pit that essentially ended the race, if I remember correctly. So it's just kind of to see then against like a top level dude what he can do compared to that other guy, like, is just, that late in a race is just, to me, was, in addition to everything else you just explained, I thought was really impressive.
Well, Bill, you also brought up sort of the idea of his expanded race calendar, and that doing the road racing and maybe getting more of that endurance, that, you know, high level endurance, that, you know, whether or not, like, is he the kind of, like, does he want to go from the gun and off the front for 9 laps, you know, or does he sort of, like, he's got the strength and he needs to sort of build in a little bit, you know, like, he's 24, but he's been racing forever. So, like, he's kind of like, he's like, you know, he's a little bit older now, you know, I don't know. I think that was an interesting point you made up, sort of like moving on to longer races and road races and how that affects his strategy. So I think that also, you know, could be part of it.
Yeah, I think we definitely benefit from Vanderpool, as you were saying, Zach, wanting to win. Well, you were talking about WOW, but I think Vanderpool also has these ambitions for the road. And to be able to do that, you train differently. Like, he was a machine built for 60 to 90 minute races. That is what Matthew Vanderpool was built to do. He was going to go out and he was going to be able to destroy you from minute one to minute 60. And he did the same thing. He was able to expand that another 20 to 30 minutes. And he was able to do that in mountain biking too. And it is like VO2 max effort the whole freaking time. And he's able to do that. But those are not his ambitions anymore. His ambitions are much longer now. And, you know, even as superhuman as Vanderpool may be, when you're training for that, you become a different rider. You lose part of that top end because you're training for these longer classics or whatever else he's training for later in the season, which we get to benefit from because it means he's not leading by a minute 30 seconds into the race. And, you know, everybody else is able to stay with him, and then you see him just wear everybody else down still by the end of the race. So I kind of like this. You know, everybody was like, oh, we're going to lose Vanderpool to road. Personally, I kind of like it because it sort of changes the way that he's approached bike racing. And I think that makes cyclocross, at least for laps, you know, 1 through 75%, more exciting.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think even as, like, now that you mentioned it, last year, right, we saw his big 5-minute VO2 effort and he just dropped everyone and he did it in, like, the second lap. And, you know, I think he even said, like, there was a race where he soloed for most of the race. It was a recent, like, not one of the bigger ones, but he was like, oh, I didn't really want to do that. But, you know, and I think it almost happened at Zolder too. Like, if I'm not mistaken, Corne Van Kessel kind of, something happened to his shifting, like in the technical section at the end. And so Corne was sitting second wheel. And when Vanderpool came out of it, he had like this big 10 second lead. And he's just like, well, I've got a 10 second lead. I guess I'll go win the race now. You know, it's like he's getting these gaps that almost happened by accident at times, you know, and he's not, he's going into having to do what Vanderpool used to do, maybe more situationally versus the complete and utter just burying of the competition that he's been doing in recent years.
I gotta say, and you, I never thought about this, but like, I think I'm less worried now about losing big cross stars to the road than maybe a few years ago, just the way we're seeing riders like Wout and Vanderpool sort of take on everything, and then all these road riders come back to cross. I think we've avoided that, you know, potential, you know, disaster, if you would. So I don't know. That was interesting.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the old school mentality that you, well, as the road teams will say, you graduate to road. And then that's where you stay, you know, and then you work your way up through the road system, being a stagiaire or whatever, and a domestique. And then you're, you know, a team leader maybe someday. And it's this whole process that really doesn't exist anymore. And you especially see it with teams like EF and whatever, where they're going to go and race gravel or race cross or race on the track or do whatever. And I think that's going to be more of the future, which I think you're right, which I think it's cool. I like to see everyone race. I think, look at all of us who love cyclocross, how stoked we were to tell our friends that we knew who Vanderpool and Wout Van Aert were. And when they're like, who are these guys? Where did they come from? Oh, we've known them since they were 14. What are you talking about? You know, so that's kind of fun to see everybody do every discipline. My last comment that I noticed just in this Azincross race. Do you all remember the Czech Republic World Championship? The junior race was Ailey Azerbeet was the favorite to win, and he was beaten by Simon Andreasen, the mountain biker. And if you had seen that race, you would have thought that Simon Andreasen was a giant. Like, he came up behind him and he just was this hulking figure behind Azerbeet, like just swarming. And you're like, holy cow, it's just like this Viking behind him. And then you see Simon Andreasen in real life. You know, I used to see him on the World Cup Tour for mountain bike, and he's maybe 5'10, maybe 5'9, 5'10, right around there. And I'm like, oh, you're not really that big. And and then you see Vanderpool, who really is that big. You couldn't even find Azerbeet like on the screen. Like, when Azerbeet was behind him, it was like he was like on a solo ride. Just the difference between them when they were riding was amazing. I always think it's one of those instances where Azerbeet actually was tucked in behind him and couldn't get a draft because he was too low. He was actually like below his body. It's just, yeah, just that contrast. I just always, it's just very, very comical to see the difference between those two riders.
And we got a good shot of that when he was chasing him down the start finish line. Yeah, with that exactly. Long lens. That was great.
Exactly.
Oh, poor Ellie. He's probably been dealing with that like most of his life.
Yeah, but look, he's made a good living at taking advantage of what he's got.
And sometimes it comes to your advantage because your soigneur can carry you to the warm tent.
Like a rag doll.
Well, to your point though, in terms of like how things are changing, I mean, just like anecdotally, my friend who's kind of like, usually he watches the tour and, you know, doesn't really watch cross. He was like, dude, it's like, do you want to come over and watch Azincross? Like, because Wout was racing. And so I think, you know, I think it can only be good for our sport that, you know, people are now wanting to watch cross because they know Wout from the tour. And, you know, I think we saw that with the attention, the number of people that showed up. To keep them in, I think it can only be good for the sport of cyclocross.
Vanderpool has been the biggest boon for the UCI than any other rider in years. I mean, think about how many road racers he has pulled into mountain biking, and especially, and cross fans, especially since they started the short track, because it's something that is cross and road, you know, from a crit perspective can understand. This looks like a road race, which it basically is. And it's short enough that it keeps everybody's attention. I mean, I think that he has done more for every discipline that he has raced in than any rider in, ever since, like, Mariana Voss. I mean, just, or even Pauline Perrin Farreau, just being able to switch disciplines.
Well, and for road too, I think, like, the excitement that he created, like, was this not like the, I'm not a road, but it seems like it's the most exciting, I mean, among people here, you know, since Lance was doing his thing. I mean, the most, honestly, like, when has there been that much excitement around, like, the spring classics and, you know, road racing?
Yeah.
But for Vanderpool, I mean, it was electric this year.
I think Vanderpool, like, well, in terms of road, is like, he is sort of taken over that spot that Sagan had. And he's turned out to be a much more versatile rider. And, you know, his road team probably won't get the invite to the Vuelta this year, but hopefully we'll be seeing Vanderpool and Wout in the same Grand Tour soon.
All right, Michael, we're coming up an hour, so I can just go on a complete tangent here for the next couple minutes before we call it.
Is this the hour limit rule?
Yeah, like, I think we're gonna have to we almost have to do like a part two curse period, because I think what we got through like a race and a half.
We missed a bunch of them, but it's okay.
It's the media pit. We're supposed to do.
Yeah. Wait, one more thing before we leave.
Yes.
Put this in your brain buckets. You know how, like, especially basketball, it's always like, you know, Jordan at his peak, you know, versus, you know, I'm trying to think of some other comparable position.
Kobe. Not Kobe. Yeah. LeBron.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. LeBron. Kobe. Yeah.
Or
right?
Kobe, so, sure.
Kobe, Jordan at their peak, who would win? It's always like this like debate that people love to have that, like, you can't actually, like, have an answer to. So it's like, I'm thinking about Chris Period. I'm thinking about Stibar. He's been racing, you know. You know, he's there. He's putting in the efforts. You know, he's not really doing anything. Maybe a top 10. But, like, I'm like, you know, what about Stevie at Tabor throwing Vanderpool, throwing, like, you know, top nines, and, like, you know, who would win? I don't know. I just, that could be a fun, fun sort of mental exercise. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah,
you got me thinking about Tabor.
Yeah, you throw in an Albert, you throw in a, you know, go back to, yeah.
Probably Vanderpool.
Here's my question for you, Michael.
Yeah.
You're a road guy. You're a road correspondent.
Yeah.
Is Sagan done?
Yes. All right. I mean, well, he might have a contract and he might, but I think he has peaked. Like I said, Vanderpool is sort of, he's taking that spot, and he's shown that he's done. Like, you know, he did what he wanted to do, and he's got other things he likes. So I think he's on his way out.
It's just crazy, isn't it? It's just like those sort of classics not even classics. I guess. He's such a hard one to classify. I mean, he won so many green jerseys. Green jersey winners are kind of like running backs in the NFL. You know, they're like good until they're not, and then they're just done.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, and all, the thing about that is, like, you know, the tour will try and change the course to sort of make it harder for you know, him to win, and he still wins, right? So, yeah, when you're really done, then yeah, I don't know.
Be interesting.
I am excited for the WOW MVDP both in the tour whenever that happens. That's gonna be fun.
All right, Zach, anything else we have to get to?
I thought that was gonna be like a bigger segue.
I like it.
I don't know. I didn't know where you were going. The way you set it up, it was like it was going somewhere. Yeah. I don't know. Like, what's, did we miss anything on the?
We didn't really talk about Deegan, but
other
we can
news going on. I want, so I just, I, before jumping on here, I watched Deegan, And so I have a thought about the sauna watch. What are your thoughts about and a very specific role that she played in that role at in that race at Degum? You know, how's the sauna watch, Michael?
Well, the sauna watch is, you know, if you just looked at today's race, you might think it's on the way up, but sauna watch is like behind. Like it's not where it needs to be at this time of the year. I'm a little bit worried. There's warnings.
I think
there's
the sauna
watch is in effect.
I think the sauna watch is a sundial, and we saw exactly how that works at Degum.
Wow, which is great, but like she won last year. I mean, that was one of the better races of the year last year, where she was just like masterful. I mean, my take was like she went full dangler at Degum. She dangled so hard, and she dangled frankly at Zolder too. She was in the group she was in the second group again. She's kind of become the dangler.
Yeah. Didn't she do that last year too? And it was just like this master course in how to win a race. I mean, she basically dangled until that last turn, made her move, and then won Degum. I mean, that was like one of her greatest wins, just because she played it so perfectly.
Well, and I'll just go back to this. And I mean, I guess some of this, long story short, is drawing on my own personal experience. But I really think what like Alvarado is doing at the start of these races is fundamentally changing, like in a way, how these women's races are playing out. She did it at Degum again. She went out like a cannon, and it was like you had to go VO2 from the get go if you wanted to hang on, you know. And I think the Dutch women are showing they can do that. And I'm super impressed by Anne-Marie Wurst, actually, you know, coming from a mountain bike background, that she has that power that she can go deep early. But I mean, it was like jump on or get left behind. And, you know, to her credit, Sana Khan, I think, is getting closer to being, I don't know, are you guys seeing that? Like, it just, because I remember in the past, right, we had like the different generations, even in the last couple years, and we had maybe like a group of eight women from Compton to Wyman to Brandmeier to, you know, Lucinda Brand would be in there, and there'd be a Anne-Marie Wurst might be in the mix. Like, it's changed, like it's so fast, like the start of these races are just bananas. So to me, that's just, I keep watching that, and I think there's this changing dynamic that's going on.
I think you are absolutely right. And what else has started to happen, Zach, because of that, where you used to have sort of this slower burn and build up in these women's races, and that's why it became exciting, because you're like, they're shorter races, and it was just like full gas once they got started. We've seen this year, which I don't think we've ever seen before, is they do the men's sit-up with about a lap or so to go. I have to go back and remember which, well, I think it was, I don't think it was Zolder, but it was one of these races where, and it's Alvarado, and she just kind of sits up. She's like, I'm not pulling you all the way down this finishing stretch, and they all regroup, and it looks just like a men's race. And then they just go off again after that. And I think you're absolutely right. That's because of the fast start. So it's that dynamic, sort of that race dynamic is playing out exactly the same, which is why everybody should race 50 minutes.
Well, I guess that would change it, because, I mean, to make the women's races a little bit longer,
yeah,
you're saying?
Yeah.
Well, and we saw that with Zolder. I mean, Zolder was almost 48, I think.
Yeah,
banger last lap.
We haven't had, like, all of these super short races in the women's field this year, which has been awesome, because I think it's, along with what you're saying, it's made for some really compelling racing in some of these. Especially with that, you know, worst Alvarado brand trio that's just beating their heads.
Well, I would actually argue the contrary. I think we've seen more solo wins too from these Dutch women, where they just, one of them gets away. You know, Alvarado's done it a couple times.
The curse period has been closer.
Curse period's been great, like, yeah, top notch, like good races. But I mean, I just
I
remember,
guess you're right.
I just
I
remember
very
like
short
these big groups, right? We
memory.
Were talking about these big groups, and we're, yeah, like, so many women can win these races, and it would be some combination of five or six. And, you know, I think there was a year Zolder had like 10 women together going into the last lap. But no, it's been getting better. And I think like Michael said, we're seeing these rivalries between the Dutch women, you know, like where Alvarado versus Wurst or Alvarado versus Brand is like, get your popcorn, and it's strategic, and it's super good. So I don't know, maybe folks listening have other thoughts, but it's just, it's been striking to me watching it, as someone who's tried racing with poor VO2 and getting dropped from the get-go. I'm in the dangler position. right, because you would see where Compton would be in like 15th place after lap one, and then she would win a race. You know, right. It's so much harder to do that. Like, you have to be in the mix from the get, or otherwise you're in a world of hurt if you want a podium.
Well, it's just that progression, as Clara would say. And I think that, to me, Degum really encapsulated Sana Kant's season in that she is sort of just off the back of that front group of those youngsters, really kind of consistently all season. And I think we're late enough in the season now that we can't say that she's just peaking for Worlds. Maybe she is. What do I know? I'm not her coach. But I just, looking on these results, I think that the winner of Worlds is going to be from the front of these races that we're seeing now. I think that's kind of, to me, it seems clear.
She had this look on her face at Degum, like it when she was dangling like 5 seconds or whatever, and she was just burying herself.
Oh yeah.
And the look on her face said, "Are you kidding me? Like, I'm doing this again. Like, I am doing everything I can. I can't do that." You know, it was just like, "Are you effing kidding me?" was the look on her face.
I can't believe she's 29.
Like, that old, like, or that young?
That old.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So maybe that is she the Euro dangler?
I think so. I think so. We'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, watch she shuts us all up and wins Worlds for the fourth time in a row.
Love it. I'd love to see it.
Yeah.
She did it last year. I mean, it was great. Like, she took on the entire Dutch Federation and she buried them. It was pretty incredible. I mean, I would love to see that. Like,
you know, Helen Wyman did commentary at Degum, and she had some actually really good, she had great commentary for both the races. And what she said about this year's world is that you do have some of the Dutch women on their actually same trade team. So you might not get some of those all women for themselves at Worlds, which might present a different, situation for Kant.
Be interesting. We'll see. See how that works out. I remember watching the Belgian men all yell at each other at Coke Cider 1 year because they were like 1 through 9, and Niels Albert was basically trying to get everybody to race for him, and there seemed to be some strong discussion about whether that was actually going to happen.
Well, speaking of teammates, I mean, we had a situation in Degum where we had want teammates close the gap on a teammate. You know, Eli was off the front Vanderpool.
I was going to save this. I was going to say, and next time on the media pit, Zach and Michael will role play the different parts of Lawrence and Ailey.
But did that happen at Jingle Cross too?
Poor Easerbeat. They just keep chasing them down.
Yeah, when him and Tone were off the front, and Easerbeat was like gesturing, like flailing, like gesturing at his teammates, like, because basically half the sauce team like bridged to him, and he was just,
yeah.
Like,
I don't think Lauren Swick came into this year with the expectation that he would be playing second fiddle to Ailey Easerbeat. I don't think that was in his game plan.
Hmm.
So
that's, yeah, I would have figured he would have seen. Yeah, it's interesting.
But they're all good now. I just read it in Sporza. Everything is okay. Water under the bridge.
Was that the translation? Was that the direct translation, or was it?
It was something along those lines. I don't.
It was great because you had the post race interview and it was in Dutch, but you could see by their facial expressions and the way the commentator was asking questions that they were talking about that situation. And then Helen translated for us afterwards. And it's interesting. It's drama. It's teammate drama. Like, and it's like such a cyclocross is not, you know, it's not a basketball game where are actually teammates fighting for one goal. It's still individuals. So you have this like crazy dynamic that does make it super interesting and colorful. And you get little like froze in the race where they hit each other. Because they're like, why are you bringing them back to me, yo?
Well, don't have to be friends to be champions. So here would be the best Google Translate. This is Easerbeat. I apologize for insinuations during the interview after the cross. That was not appropriate at all. Write our team down for BK or Belgian championships in Antwerp. And then Swick answered, send it over in Antwerp. So I still don't know who they're racing for in Antwerp, but they all seem to be on board for Belgian
to send it over. Well, they all want to beat Tone. All right, so we're yeah, focused on at least that.
Yeah.
I guess. I mean, team go sauces. Go sauce.
Merlier and Vermeer should just like, they're just like over in the corner saying, nobody's paying attention to us. Here we come.
Yeah, that's great. Merlier could be the CX and road Belgian champ.
He could. He really could. He could be up there. All right. I've tried to end this 3 times already.
Okay.
Cool. Did we? I thought we acknowledged that we were going into overtime. So
I think that's fair.
That's fine. All right. Well, we had like the hour. I think that should be our thing. Like after an hour, it just like turns into like a 15-minute free for all. And if you want to keep listening, that's cool.
Exactly. You can quit in an hour, or you can go into extra time.
Okay. Well, so
penalty
Bill.
Time.
Yes.
You're going to be our Belgian correspondent. I mean, we might not talk to you, but you're going to be a Belgian correspondent. You're going to Belgium?
I am going to Belgium. I was trying to pull up my itinerary here. I will be at Gulegem, Brussels, and Oudegem. Those are the races that I will be working at. But the cool thing, I believe on the January 12th, maybe, I'll be able to go to Belgian Nats, I believe.
Nice.
Cool. So basically, Michael, I think the next media pit, you and I are just going to ask a lot of questions to Bill. I think it's going to be, we're going to ask the questions, and I don't know, maybe I'll be in that role that you were for Nats, where we're like, we're trying to like say stuff, and Bill's going to be like, no, here's how it was.
Well, no, I'll be like, so what really happened in these races? Oh,
yeah. Yes, sure.
Because all I saw was like the back of this guy's head in a blue cloud of smoke.
Fair. We'll be asking you which of the Powell Sousins is the best one on the Freets. That's your homework, Bill.
Awesome. I gladly accept.
That sounds delicious.
All right, Zach, what you got going on?
Curse period. We nailed it, huh? I love it. I just love doing the Slow Ride podcast. Yeah, we covered curse period.
It's not even over yet. We didn't finish.
That's how good we are. Anyway, those guys are great. CXMagazine.com for all of your cursed period race coverage and moving on to the rest of the cyclocross season. And I'm at The Shoe Star. So if I tweet something, please let me know I screwed up vaguely. So then I'll bring it up on the show. Who knows?
Perfect. Michael.
You can find me tweeting at Zach about how offensive he is
from your burner accounts.
yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's who that was. Okay, yeah. I see how this is going.
My non-burner account is at LandSoftly, and then you can also find me on Instagram at YeahYouRide. And I haven't been to a bike race in a long time, but I have so many photos that I was going to do maybe like some sort of like top 10 of 2019. So go check it out or look for it soon.
Awesome. Michael, would that be a power ranking? Like, are they going to be ranked?
Wow. I didn't think about power ranking in my photos, but I will base it purely on an algorithmic method.
Science. Awesome. All right. You can find me at CX Airs on most social media. I took TikTok off my phone because I just didn't want the Chinese on there poking around. But other than that, Twitter, Instagram, cxairs.com as well. And there should be a heat check out there on youtube.com/cxairs. Last one of the season. Go check that out. And we will see you soon for the post-cursed period media pit.